sights to show you.
Welcome to the 50th episode! Burr, 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 50 of Sirens of Scream.
Who knew we'd get this far?
I know, right? The geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. My name is Sierra Houck, and I'm here with my lovely siren co-hosts, Melissa and Jackie. Hello.
Hi, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You guys, we made it to 50.
50.
That's crazy.
That's a lot of us jabbering on and on and on.
And people are still listening for some reason.
Well, I want to jump right in with some recommendations that I found since we recorded last. There's an artist that I found named Shapeless Flame on Instagram, and she's working on a project right now where she's doing embroideries of different cryptids as the different astrological signs.
Cool.
Uh-huh. And Gemini is two aliens, which is very exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, and she's super awesome. I met her in the Facebook group for That's Weird podcast, another Seattle creepy horror podcast.
Oh, but her trash panda embroidery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just making real good craft stuff.
Where the frick's the Leo one? Come on.
She's working on it. She says it takes her forever to do, but she's like working hard on it.
This is cool, yeah. Though. I like this.
She's awesome. Her real name is Natalie Kovacs, and it's at Shapeless Flame.
Nice.
I finally watched that movie Game Night, which came out kind of recently. It's like a dark comedy.
I know not of this movie.
Oh,
what is it?
It's very fun.
I don't either. I've never heard of it.
It has Jason Bateman from Arrested Development. That's his name, right?
Yeah.
He is starring in it. And it's about this couple who is super into board game nights. And the like main guy's brother is in town, and he's this like big shot, super rich guy. And so he's like, I'm going to throw the best game night you guys have ever seen. And he invites them all over to this like big mansion that he's renting. And he stages a murder mystery where one of the people like gets kidnapped.
That's trouble written all over it.
Mm-hmm. And it goes off the rails very fast, and it's very fun and bloody. And it's directed and I want to say written by, at least directed by, John Francis Daly, who was from Freaks and Geeks and Bones, which I just watched all of. So that was very exciting to see him doing
sweet.
More things.
Oh, yeah, I love him.
It's actually written by Mark Perez.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I just thought he should get credit for writing it.
Well, all right.
Yeah, we have this one, but we haven't watched it yet. But I remember watching the trailer and like it's on our, you know, it's on our movie list, so we can watch it when we're ready.
Good. I was surprised by it. I wasn't expecting too much, and I enjoyed it a lot. What about you, Melissa?
Well, you recommended A Quiet Place a while back. I think it was a few weeks ago. And we finally got to watch it. And it was fucking awesome.
And still no spoilers, because I might actually be watching that tonight.
Okay, I won't spoil it. I won't spoil it. But it was amazing. I was super impressed. It really, really does an excellent job of amping up the tension just right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things that like I jumped online right afterwards to kind of like read more about it and like, ooh, I want to know what was behind this movie and, you know, where the ideas came from. And
did you find any interesting facts about it?
Well, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it. But, you know, yeah, I think the more I read about the concepts behind it and sort of, you know, the more I came to appreciate it. There's an admirable lack of filler in this movie. You know, they don't spend a lot of time like explaining things or giving you exposition, and it's really unnecessary. And
yeah, it's a lot of they hint at something that's like on a newspaper cutout on the wall or something, but never say
it's clear enough for you to know what's happening all the time, but you don't have to have all these kind of unnecessary conversations where, you know, everything's being spoon-fed to you throughout the movie, which I appreciate. And it made it feel like the tension never stopped, you know, like nothing brought you out of it. It was definitely a little rough for me.
Emotionally wise?
Yes. I didn't expect to be kind of caught off guard at the early onset of the film the way that I was.
Mm-hmm.
That was rough. And it's super interesting because the whole movie was filmed in my area. In fact, there's a well-known scene in there that happens on the Long Bridge on the old rusty bridge. That bridge is the rail trail near my house. Like, we walked on it a bunch of times. It was real. Yeah, it was really cool to see it. It was like, I know that bridge. the bridge is actually in my town. It's like very close to my house. The other stuff in it was filmed at kind of like on various farms around the area, but they were all filmed in my area.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so it was a big deal made out of it when they were here filming, because, you know, people were spotting them all over the place, and like some people had to like let them use their homes and their farms and stuff to set up various things. So I heard a lot more about it being made than I heard about the actual movie until you talked about it on the show.
That's funny.
But it was awesome. I really loved it. And I can't wait for Jackie to see it so we can talk more.
I want you to know I tried really hard to watch that over this past weekend, specifically so that I could join you in this conversation, and it didn't work out with our totally legal server at
home. Yeah, well, we had technical issues too. You know, we watched like the first like 30 minutes of it at one point, and I will say, go ahead and set up subtitles right off the bat.
All right.
Which we didn't think we needed to at first. And then it was like, all right, there's a whole fucking conversation going on in sign language here, and neither one of us know what's happening.
Good to know.
Yeah, one of the daughters is deaf, and so they use a lot of sign language in the film.
Which is great for that family, because now they can communicate.
Yeah, and I think I told you guys this when Sierra talked about it, but the actress who plays that girl is actually deaf, and everybody else had to learn sign language to work around that.
Nice.
So, which is also very admirable that all these people learned sign language for this film. It was great. And Jackie, I think in particular, you'll be impressed. I was very impressed with the quality of the monsters in this film.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was looking them up afterwards. Like, holy shit, how did they do that? When they finally show you something, it's like, wow, okay. I didn't think that was in the budget for this movie. It's a cool, cool monster. So I want to tell you quickly about a new comic book I just read tonight from our friend Cullen Bunn, and art by Jonas Scharf. It is a new series that's coming out actually when this, it'll be out July 25th, so it'll be this week.
Hey, that's my birthday.
Oh, really? Yeah. Happy early birthday!
Yay!
By the time the show comes out, it'll probably already be out, so yeah. You guys can read it. It's called Bone Parish, number one. And it's from Boom Studios, and it is a really cool story about a drug. This family figures out how to make a drug made from the ashes of the dead.
Cool.
So they're essentially like grave robbers, and they turn this stuff that's kind of looks like cocaine, and they call it ash, and it gives the people who take the drug the experience of the life of who had the ashes before.
So like iZombie with bones instead of brain?
Yeah, sort of. Except for it's kind of like they basically have a trip and they experience that person's life, but things start going badly. You know, bad trips.
As it always does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool because there's this family at the heart of it that's you know, they kind of become this crime family. Like they created this drug and the whole family has a part in it. There's like, you know, there's a mother at the top of the food chain here in this family, and she's controlling everything. And her kids are basically doing all the work. Mm-mm. One of the girls is a scientist, and she's like, she's created the drug. And then she's got a couple of the boys that are out digging around in graves. And one of the guys handles like all the deals. So it's a crime story, crime family story, but with a really creepy drug at the center of it. It's cool. I read number one just tonight, actually, and nice. I recommend it. And then one more thing I want to tell you guys, we just discovered on Netflix a show called Dark Tourist. Have you guys heard about this at all?
No. Nope.
I've seen that one come up.
We just watched a couple episodes of it yesterday, and then I watched some more today. It's really fun. It's kooky and weird. This journalist named David Ferrier, and he decides to visit unusual and macabre tourism spots around the world. And
that's awesome.
Each episode is like focused on a different area that he goes to, and he'll visit like multiple little things in each area. Part of the charm of this is the weird and macabre places that he goes and the strange people that he meets. And then part of it is that this guy, the host of the show, is like, he looks like the most polite, like sweet-natured, sort of like mellow hipster guy. Mm-hmm. He's like this little guy in like glasses and a little 5 o'clock shadow, and he's always wearing like a nice little sweater, and he's very, you know, nice mannered, and he's very nerdy looking. And it's like, and it's funny because he goes out and he, just the way that he reacts to some of these people. The two that we've watched so far, I watched Latin America, which is episode one. And David meets Pablo Escobar's enforcer in Colombia, which is unsettling and weird. Later, he sees an exorcism in Mexico and he participates in a faux illegal border crossing.
Wow.
Which is all this weird stuff. And then the other one I watched was the United States. And in that one, he meets a Jeffrey Dahmer enthusiast in Milwaukee.
Oh,
he takes two tours dedicated to JFK's assassination in Dallas, and he literally goes to a birthday party with vampires in New Orleans. It's so wacky and strange and weird. I love it. There's only 8 episodes of it right now, and I'm like, I know as soon as I finish this, I'm going to want more of it.
That definitely sounds fun.
Yeah, I think there's this great moment, just a little example, there's this great moment where he's in Texas, he's on one of those tours of JFK's assassination, and the guy that's running the tour is like driving these, they almost look like golf cart limos, they're like these really long stretched out open carts, open sided carts, and he's like blaring this dubstep like party music out of it while he's driving all these people around. And then this woman dressed as Jackie O gets into the cart and sits next to him, and she just looks sad. She just has this like sad face, and she doesn't talk to anybody. And the tour bus driver just finally tells David, he's like, yeah, she's acting all the time. Like she's paid to, she's not even allowed to smile. She's not supposed to smile. It's so weird. She just said she's sitting right next to David as they're filming. And she just like staring at the ground and looking sad in a little pink outfit with a little hat on.
That's fun.
It's super fun. You guys have to check it out. You'll love it because it's a great combination of like silly and goofy along with really weird, creepy things.
That's my jam.
Yeah.
Love it. Jackie, do you want to tell us about this artist? I just opened the Etsy store and I'm like going down a rabbit hole now.
I do. So this is Michael Mahaffey. He's a local Savannah artist. And you know how sometimes you'll start like following an artist on Instagram or something and just kind of fall in love with their pieces and say to yourself, oh, I really need to buy something from them. And then just kind of forget to buy stuff for a while. But, you know, you keep loving on them and then, you know, like go in that cycle of, oh, yeah, I need to buy something, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So this is one of those artists, or he was one of those artists for me for a while. And then one day he posted some feedback he got from a previous, we'll call them a client. This person had bought like a sticker from him years ago and then thought it was appropriate to email him and admonish him for his political views, for being political in his artwork specifically. Like, this bitch had bought like a $3 sticker, I am telling you, and then like got on his case for being political in his art and like saying, like, you're okay, never gonna make any sales any being stickers. Political Jesus. I know, right? Like, so I was like, she was like, she was saying, you're never going to sell any more art being political like that. You need to, you know, appeal to everybody. I'm like, fuck that. This is the time that I'm going to buy art from this guy to show him. Yes, he will. Absolutely. So I went and purchased a couple of pieces from him through Etsy here. And he saw that I was in Savannah and said, sent me a message, said, hey, do you want to just come down to my studio and pick those up so you don't have to pay shipping? I'm like, yeah, of course. His studio or the studio he's working out of just happened to be a couple blocks from my house.
Dude, that's crazy.
I know. He actually lives on the same street I live on. This is a crazy story. I'm actually, it's
new
weird
best
I haven't
friend.
Told I know. It's bizarre I haven't told you guys this story before. But so Drew and I went down to pick up the art pieces and it was after hours. He let us in the studio and all this, and we just like we instantly clicked. Like those moments where you meet somebody and you're like instantly friends. Like we walked through the door and he immediately hugged me and we immediately started talking about everything. He's a huge horror fan. Like he would come on the show and be everybody's best friend. I'm telling you, we need to actually have him on here at some point. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments where, you know, we walked in there to pick up a couple of art pieces and suddenly it's 2 hours later. But he does some incredible graffiti artwork with stencils on canvas. And it's something that I feel is really unique. Like, you don't really see a lot of stencil on canvas art. So I really love that he does that. But more specifically than the actual medium, there is his personal style. He likes to combine a lot of different elements here. He loves combining meaningful lyrics with feminine characters and a lot of very powerful visuals, and I am absolutely in love with it. He absolutely pulls together a lot of horror views. Like, he has a very cool Elvira painting.
Mm-hmm.
He's got really badass birds painting. He does a zombie Lucille Ball portrait, a zombie Lady Liberty. I'm sorry, Lady Liber Zombie.
Jackie.
What?
Tell me the truth.
What?
You got the T-Rex that says part of your wig at y'all, right?
I wanted to. I really wanted to. Drew and I actually debated like the whole day which ones we were gonna get.
T-Rex in stilettos with a cocktail in his tail.
That was seriously one of my top choices. I'm not even gonna lie to you. No, I ended up getting the Space Girl, and I don't know if he still has it on here, but it was Frankenstein's Bride saying, "You're a monster, but you're my monster."
Aw.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun stuff on here.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of fun. And I would really recommend you to especially follow his Instagram, because you're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And Melissa, I have been really thinking about getting you one of his fuck this imperialist bullshit Princess Leia things for a while. And now I'm kind of sorry I said so, because I was going to surprise you with it.
So many good Princess Leias.
I'm looking for him right now.
But so, yeah, that's Mr. Mahaffey.
Nice. Oh, he has a cute dog, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, meeting him was one of those weird kind of, like, if I believed in meant to be kind of stuff, it would be one of those moments. The
stars were aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool, especially since he's your neighbor.
I know.
Wonder who my neighbor is.
Maybe you should get to know them.
Find out.
I've made an effort not to get to know mine.
See, this is the South. You can't do that here.
That's a good thing about living on a big street that doesn't have sidewalks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Big, busy road with no sidewalks, so nobody walks up and down the street, really.
Nope.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a real short break, and then we'll come back to talk about movies and the curses that have befallen the people who work on them. We all love a good scary story, but do those stories have the power to incite real horror on the real world? Sometimes life imitates art, but what happens when the art is a movie about demonic possessions? Are there some stories that are just so horrible that those who tell them become cursed? When you start to look at the string of bad luck that some movies' productions encounter, it gets a little hard to write them off as coincidence. And we're going to talk about just a few of those today, starting with the very original curse with Macbeth. Jackie, do you want to give us some history? As a theater kid, I feel a little bad saying Macbeth, honestly.
Maybe. You're not supposed to say it.
I got to do the turn around three times and go spit.
I know our software might just crap out on us right now, but we're gonna try. According to a theatrical superstition called the Scottish curse, speaking the name Macbeth inside a theater will cause disaster. A variation of the superstition also forbids quoting it within a theater, except as a part of an actual rehearsal or performance of the play. A little aside here, some actors actually believe you shouldn't say the word Macbeth even within rehearsal, only specifically within an actual live performance of the play. Those who believe in the curse claim that real spells are cast in the Three Witches scene. Some of those who believe in the reality of the spells also believe real witches should be chosen to act the roles, and that it is a failure, right? And that it is a failure to do so that creates the environment within which the curse supposedly has effect. Some believers claim that including the character Hecate, frequently cut from productions, intensifies the curse. Some say Shakespeare wrote those parts unwittingly, though under threats by a local coven, which were becoming increasingly common in 16th century England. There's also the belief that the rumor was spread by the church to basically lend favor to them during the trials of the Pendle witches. If you haven't ever researched the trials of the Pendle witches, do yourself a favor and go down that rabbit hole, because it's a pretty fucked up one.
I haven't.
It's pretty messed up, and the church really kind of needed the, we're going to call them townsfolk.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun word. They needed the townsfolk kind of on their side on that one. So it would make sense to kind of cast that shadow on witchcraft in general, and who was more popular at that time than Shakespeare. So using his popularity to piggyback off of would have been a smart move to do so. So that would make sense. But who really knows where that actually originated? However,
I like the alternative of these witches have Shakespeare's like in the palm of their hand.
I know. I love that idea. I love that they, you know, from afar, this coven of witches is just kind of cursing Shakespeare and really working him to actually write this into his play, and he has no idea that he's doing so. Mm-hmm. There have been so many incidents surrounding saying Macbeth in a theater that it is kind of bizarre and really hard to dispute that this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. So here are just a few of the more famous ones. These are listed as historic, and this is by no means an exhaustive list. So if you're curious, just Google an exhaustive list, because I mean, even just the Wikipedia page is going to show you just frickin' dozens. Accidents attributed to the curse of the Scottish play. Arson in 1721 by a disgruntled patron. The Astor Place riot in 1849. Injuries sustained by actors at a 1937 performance of The Old Vic, which is another name for Macbeth, that starred Laurence Olivier. Diana Wynyard's 1948 accidental fall. Burns suffered by Charlton Heston in 1954, among many others. And recently, Ari Aster, writer and director of Hereditary, said that during filming, quote, Alex Wolff told me not to say the name of William Shakespeare's Scottish play out loud because of some superstitious theater legend. I smugly announced the name, and then one of our lights burst during the shooting of the following scene. Notice that even during that quote, he wouldn't say the name.
That'll teach you to fuck with us.
Well, that's always fun.
That's awesome. So a couple of those things that you mentioned are like common themes, I think, that are going to come up in the next movies that we're going to talk about. Definitely a lot of people falling and getting injured. Fires for sure happen a couple times. And just like the church possibly benefiting from this rumor. Our next one is The Exorcist. And when The Exorcist came out, there was, you know, a big influx in people going back to church and like getting really into Catholicism all over again because they were scared of the devil.
The devil?
The devil! In The Exorcist, during filming, actress Ellen Burstyn, she played Regan's mother, in the film. She was injured during a stunt where she ended up with permanent spinal cord injuries. And in the scene, I know, right? It's the scene where she's thrown from the bed and they filmed it once and pulled her really hard. And she said, don't do that again. And then he was like, yeah, okay, we won't do that again. Let's set up again. And then the director like looked at the guy who was controlling the harness and he's like, really give it to her. And so then he did it again and she fell really, really hard on her tailbone and broke like stuff and got really messed up. And so the scream that's used in the movie is her actual scream in pain as this injury is happening. And they just kept filming. There's a clip on YouTube that I have in our notes where she's talking about it. And she's like, that was just not okay for them to go that far to get okay, the so film.
First of all, what an asshole.
I know.
And second of all, a whole group of assholes using that mm-hmm. scream. And oh my God, just mm-hmm. Jesus.
Poor woman. Yeah. And then there was another injury later on during filming where Linda Blair got hurt when a piece of rigging broke. Lots of people getting back injuries specifically. Before they started filming, there was a big fire that broke out on the sets. And so it delayed the filming starting. And it turned out it was a pigeon that flew into some electrical boxes and wow. started the fire. And it torched everything in the house setting except for Regan's bedroom. Which is spooky, obviously.
Poor pigeon.
I know. It would have been spookier if it was a crow or a raven, though. Just, you know, some notes for for their retelling of this. A few actors died after filming. Actor Jack McGoran, who played Brooks Denning, the alcoholic director, and the woman who played Father Karras's mother, both died within a few months after filming. McGoran died of a heart attack after he had the flu. And then the actress Basilic Malieros, who was Father Karras' mother in his dream sequence, died of natural causes. She was 89. And what's interesting about that is that both of their characters also die in the movie, too. Mm. And then other deaths surrounding the film. Linda Blair's grandfather died while they were filming. Max von Sarrow's brother died on Max's first day of shooting. And while they were filming, the actor who played Father Karras' son almost died by being hit by a motorcycle. There are a lot of tragedies around it. And then this one is super weird. In 1987, which was about 14 years or so after the movie came out, the woman who was the voice of the demon Pazuzu, her name is Mercedes McCambridge, which is quite a name. Her son murdered his wife and kids and then killed himself. And it was a whole scandal where he was a broker. He was quietly investing his mother's money and using the company's money at the same time. And he was charging the losses to the company's account and the profits to his mother's. He got caught and let go within 3 days of the killings. And he wrote this like 13-page suicide note where he talks about how it was his mother's fault and she was super abusive. And then he ended up killing his family because he saw no other way because he was super broke and like, what's the word?
Crazy?
He was certainly crazy. And his mother sounded very crazy too. And he couldn't like, you know, continue in the industry because he had done this horrible thing and like laundered money. Just strange that the woman who does the voice of the demon turned out to be kind of demonic in real life too. And then after the film's release, there are a lot of people claiming that seeing the film would invite demon possession to the point where it was banned in all of the Middle East. And it was banned in a bunch of towns in the UK to the point where people had to take buses into neighboring towns and counties where it was playing so that they could go see it. And there was these like big exorcist bus trips where all these people were loaded into buses and like went into the next town, which sounds really fun.
That does sound fun.
Yeah. And then when it premiered in Rome, there was a huge thunderstorm. When the film started, people said that there were demonic cries outside and there was all this lightning and it was just like really creepy and atmospheric. And at one of the, I'm not sure where in the world this was, but at one showing, a man fainted when he saw it in the theater and he broke his jaw. And then he sued Warner Brothers and they settled out of court because they didn't want to go to court.
Weird.
Yeah. So he got a break with that. A literal break.
I mean, it sounds like a fairly like I don't know, not well structured film filming situation too.
Oh yeah.
Like everything's kind of messy around the whole filming of this.
It certainly is, and then all of the catastrophe just keeps coming after it's released. And the book that the film was based on a supposedly true story. It was about a boy who his aunt was a spiritualist and she let him play with the Ouija board, which got him possessed, which is never a good move. He ended up having an exorcism, and it's called The Exorcism of Ronald Doe, if anybody wants to go look that up. That's the original thing that it's based off of. The author of the book, William Peter Blatty, was advised by Thomas Brigham, who is an actual priest, to write the book when he learned about this exorcism. And then that priest who encouraged the book to be written played a small role in the movie. And then also, after all this crazy shit started happening on set, he was asked to bless the set. And I don't know if that actually helped at all, but he was there and he blessed it. And he was also a religious consultant on the Amityville Horror. This one guy has had kind of an influence on the demonic movies that are now these classics.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's The Exorcist. Lots of crazy stuff happening there with deaths and fires and people getting hurt on set. Even crazier things happened with The Omen.
When I was a teenager, my older sister had two cats, and they were named Reagan and Damien.
Oh, that's excellent.
I just remember it because I think I hadn't really seen many horror movies at that point. I was pretty, she's 10 years older than me, so I was younger, but I was kind of, I remember the point at which I realized why the cats were named that way.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
It was those a black really cat and a white cat, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's really good. So on The Omen, two big crazy things. First of all, Gregory Peck had a super hard time. 2 months before he started filming, his son committed suicide. And then on his way to start filming, the plane he was on was struck by lightning, which caused the engines to catch fire, and they almost completely crashed into the Atlantic.
Yeesh.
Which is wild. And then, because these things happen in threes, the producer of the movie and the screenwriter were also in different planes that were struck by lightning at different points during the shoot. When they were filming in Rome, which, you know, again, Rome, there was another big crazy storm, and another producer was almost struck by lightning there. So they really don't like these demon movies coming up in Rome.
Certainly not.
And then also when filming this movie, there were a ton of weird things with animals. There was an animal trainer who, there's the scene with the baboons. He was working in that scene, and then the day after, he was killed by having his head ripped off by a tiger.
Yeah.
And I wrote these notes so long ago that now I'm like, why didn't I put any context for that? Like, where was he where there was a tiger?
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, was this tiger related somehow? Like,
it was a friend of the baboon.
They just over one night.
Just like a random tiger just like walking by.
He like has a pet tiger because he can do that as an animal trainer. So that guy died because of it. And then also when they were filming at the end of the movie, the Rottweiler scene, they had, of course, you know, these really highly trained dogs on the set. And all of a sudden, all these dogs decided to stop listening to their trainers and they attacked the stuntman for real and bit through the padding that he had on for that scene.
Oh, geez.
And they finally got control of the dogs like right at the last minute before he was seriously injured. But it's weird that like these dogs that are, you know, trained to be in movies and all this stuff would just stop listening. All of them together stop listening and like go for it and try to really hurt this guy. So the animals can't be controlled. And then the last thing that's super crazy with this one, the special effects director, John Richardson, who was working on the film, he worked on the scene where a truck is backing up and this like sheet of glass or something comes off of the truck and decapitates a person. After he was done working on the everything for that scene, he went to like go film on another movie. I think he was in like Norway or something, like one of those up there. And he was driving down a road. He was with his wife and another designer, Liz Moore. They're driving and there is a car coming straight ahead at them, and they get into this really bad crash, and the other designer in the car, Liz, gets decapitated just like he designed in The Omen.
Oh my god.
I know. And he claims, which this is the part where it's like, this isn't real. I'm sure this woman actually died, but John Richardson said that just off of the road where they had this big crash, there was a sign that pointed to this town, Omen, with two M's, O-M-M-E-N, and that it was 66.6 kilometers away.
No way. No.
Which is like, bullshit.
Nuh-uh.
Because why would you mark 0.6 really? On the roadside? But I think, and maybe that was just some Wikipedia lies, but I thought that was very funny and like the kind of story that you would tell around a campfire.
Yeah, it totally is.
We have a couple from the Amityville Horror. I didn't get too deep into this, but in the original, James Brolin, who played the dad when he was first like up for the role and offered it, he was reading the book, the original Amityville Horror book, and he was reading at like, you know, 2 a.m. and he is at a super intense part of the book. And as he's reading across the bedroom, a pair of pants fall off of a shelf just by themselves. And that's, he was like, okay, I guess I'll do this movie. It seems like, oh, there's a ghost in my room. Maybe I shouldn't do this movie.
Oh no, my pants.
Yeah, that sounds far less creepy when you tell it after the story of the woman being killed in a car accident.
I know.
See, there was this thing with my pants.
The ghost sent me a message.
Let me tell you about my pants.
And then in the remake, Ryan Reynolds claimed that while they were filming, he woke up every night at 3:15, which is the time that George Lutz woke up. And when the DeFeo family was murdered, like the time every night in the story.
I love your note here. So method.
I know. Truly. And then not super coincidentally, because he was kind of getting old, but right after the remake came out, the actual George Lutz died about a month after. Or no, sorry, a month before the remake came out. A little bit after it was done filming.
It happens. Everyone dies.
Yeah. And just a few days before they started filming that remake, a dead fisherman just washed up on the shore next to the house that they were going to be filming at, which was like not a good sign.
Definitely not a good sign.
No.
So the next one is The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
The Conjuring 1 and 2. And when I saw this on the list here, I got the urge to watch again. It's my happy place.
Good.
And I have
something
couple...
very wrong with that, Jackie.
it's comforting to me. So the first one is what I watched. I have a couple things to say that are related to the movie, but not to the topic.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I have a thing with birds. Have I told you guys this before?
That you have human hands on them?
I remember that.
Yeah, I do put arms onto birds, but that's not what
not
this
like
is.
Really, but
this
like
is a different thing with birds you're talking about.
This is a different thing with birds. So I don't know what it is, but okay. So in the movie, there's a weird thing with birds. The first Conjuring, birds keep slamming into the windows and dying, and then there's a bird attack at one point. That happens to me. Like with the past 4 places I've lived, birds just fly into the windows, like
aww,
kind of often, and die. It's very bizarre. One of the places that happened so frequently that we had to put owls in the windows, mm-hmm. like fake owls and pictures of owls so that they would stop flying into the windows. Birds like kind of get in the house sometimes. And then there's this one occasion where Drew and I were out making a Craigslist deal, like for some video game shit. And we're like standing in this weird mall parking lot talking to this dude about video games, making a shady deal in a parking lot. And this crow comes and lands on my head. It just stands on my head. And like, like I'm a perch. And then I like I'm like waving my hand by it, thinking it's going to get spooked by just waving the hand near it. No, I had to physically shove this bird off of my head. And even when I did that, this motherfucker just like landed on the truck that I was right next to, like 6 inches away, and then stared at me like I'm an asshole. Like this freaking bird.
What kind of bird was it?
It was a crow. And oh. I like, so when I, and this is a kind of a common theme in horror movies, this whole weird bird thing. So anytime this comes up in horror movies, like, it freaks me out. It's really starting to get to me, guys. So that's a thing I just needed to get off my chest. But the other thing is, so I'm going to let out some Conjuring spoilers here. It's been a few years.
I've seen Conjuring.
I know. Yeah.
And like, listen to our podcast?
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm just going to. Yeah, you guys can get over it at this point. So toward the end there, after the demon has left the mother's body, after the mother tries to kill the youngest daughter, right? With the demon face and everything, crawling through the underside of the house and all that, grabbing the little girl with the knife and everything. All right, when everything's happy and they're coming out of the house, that little girl is hugging on her mom and letting her mom kiss her face and everything. First of all, why is the little girl not more afraid of her mother?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this just happened.
Because demons lie.
It literally just happened. Does
this little girl know?
She was freaking terrified. Okay? And why is she letting her mother kiss her face when she clearly still has demon breath? Like, it literally just happened. No way does this woman not still have demon breath.
Yes. Yeah. She needs to at least, like, brush her teeth.
Yeah. I mean, she still had demon face a little bit. Definitely still had demon breath. So those are the things I wanted to share with you. I'm going to put my book down now. I wrote notes and everything. Like,
thank you for that.
I don't know what they were thinking with the whole daughter being totally okay with her mom, like, 5 minutes after. But when the screenwriters were working on the script, they were talking to Lorraine Warren a lot to, you know, ask her questions and get her input on it. And whenever they would call her, there would be like a bunch of static on the phone when they kind of, you know, finished the phone call. And Lorraine was like, well, yeah, obviously, we're about to expose the dark side of the dark side, and it doesn't want good to win. I'm surprised there isn't a lot more interference.
I love that.
I know. She's such a badass. Before they started filming, the woman who played Lorraine, she got the script on her laptop. She opens up her laptop to read it, and there were these like 3 claw marks on her screen. And I don't know how that works because it's like a screen. I don't know how there are claw marks. I was trying to imagine what it would look like, and I have no fucking idea what she means.
Like, they were, like, actual the claw thing marks? I imagine
that it was a digital claw mark. Like,
yeah, what the hell is a digital claw mark?
That's what she said in some interview. And then she also said that on the day that they finished filming, she had 3 actual marks on her leg, which, of course, 3 is, like, happens a lot in, like, 3 scratches. If you've watched any ghost hunting shows. You know,
it is always
them mocking the Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
Those silly demons.
Them ghosts. They love it.
And then one of the actors who played the kids, Joey King, she had mysterious bruising on her body too, which she couldn't really explain.
Fun.
At one point during filming, they decided it would be a good idea to bring the family that the movie is based on, the Perrin family, and that sparked a lot of weird stuff. Right when they arrived, there was a big gust of wind that like encircled the family while the trees and everything around them was completely like still. I don't know why, but at the same time, the mother of the family did not want to go because she's like, I don't want anything to do with this. They said that at the exact moment that her family was engulfed in this wind, she felt this like really dark presence and she fell and had to go to the hospital.
What?
I'm sure it happened at the exact same moment. And then a few days after that, the hotel that the cast and crew were staying in mysteriously caught on fire. So more fires happening on set. Also on set, people heard a whimpering dog that wasn't Aww. There. I know. At one point, James Wan, the director, was working on set late at night, and he had his actual living dog with him. And the dog started growling at an unseen intruder, which is never a good sign.
No, you no.
He said she was just tracking whatever this thing was across my office, just looking at it, following it. She did this many, many nights in a row, and it just freaked me out.
You always listen to the dogs.
I know. He wrote it into his movie, but he didn't take his own advice.
What an asshole.
What the hell? After The Conjuring 2 came out, almost like how people said that The Exorcist would invite demon possessions, a lot of people were claiming that they had weird hauntings happening in their house after the movie. So if they went and saw it in the theaters or watched it at home, that like something would follow them and haunt them, which, you know, could have just been a marketing ploy too.
Yeah.
Or just people being spooked out after watching a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just kind of the point of a horror movie.
Yeah, a little bit. That was The Conjuring. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up is just a classic, not a horror movie, but a movie that there is an urban legend around it. Three Men and a Baby. There's this like commonly known shot where people say that you can see a ghost child. And it's in the scene where Ted Danson is walking through the house and a boy is seen behind a curtain. The house that they filmed in is said to be haunted. And the rumor was that the ghost is a little boy who tried to kill himself with a shotgun. And there were rumors that when the movie came out, the boy's mother tried to sue the movie studio because they released it without removing the little boy's image. And of course, the other version of that is that she saw the movie and saw her little boy in it who was dead and then went insane naturally.
Right, of course, yeah.
The more extreme version of the legend. And of course, this one is not true, unfortunately. There's a Snopes.com article about it. It turns out that the ghost that people, or what people think is the ghost, is a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. As a goof.
Oh, God. That's wonderful.
And to add even more to it, they filmed all of the scenes on a soundstage, not in an actual haunted house.
Hmm.
There were no murders surrounding their locations. But that's one that I have heard other people talk about, which unfortunately, it's not true.
That's hilarious.
It's also just such a random movie to have a ghost association.
Yeah, that like,
like, but like that kind of gives more reason for you to believe it. Like, if a ghost was gonna show themselves, they wouldn't necessarily be on the horror movies.
That's true.
Like, there's a lot of movies filmed. You never know when they're going to catch something.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of me saying facts and trying to read things and trying to make it sound natural. There's obviously a lot of other movies that have these, like, urban legends and curses around them. Poltergeist and Rosemary's Baby, The Crow and Psycho.
Oh, The Crow. You know.
Like anything that has ghosts and demons associated with it, basically.
High school goth Jackie is already sad about The Crow. Thinking about it.
Well, I mean, there's so much more content that I cut us off there, but we could always come back to it, too.
Yeah, we're going to need to.
Uh-huh. This is a short kind of urban legend, but people claim that in a scene in The Wizard of Oz, the group of them are going down the yellow brick road and off to the side along the like forest scenery, you can see something kind of swinging back and forth.
Right.
And people said that it was one of the munchkins committed suicide.
Yeah. But that was disproven though, right?
Yeah. No, it's just like some rope or something moving.
But we don't care about facts on this show.
Of course
not. We're not ghosts.
We're in it for the fun.
I'll never get over the guy saying that he saw the Omen Road.
I know.
6 kilometers away.
Sounds like that guy was trying to get a little extra publicity off. Like,
honestly, dude.
And I saw a kid with black hair who was in the bushes.
Like, honestly, man.
He pointed at me right before the accident happened.
He was driving the other car.
If my husband was trying to pull some cheap tricks like that after I had just been decapitated, I would be haunting his ass from here until eternity.
That's the actual curse.
Yeah, you covered a lot of material.
I was just so inspired after our last episode where we didn't have a topic and we came up with this one.
We just have to talk about not having topics to come up with new topics.
I know. It'll be like one and then the other. Like, we'll flip-flop between not having something, coming up with the next one, and doing that one.
That does seem to work for us.
I know. So if you've been enjoying our happy little horror show, we would like to remind you to leave the Signs of Scream a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever you listen to this podcast on, which helps us get new people to find us and builds the audience. And that just makes us feel happy. And we love hearing new people come in and talk about the aspects of horror that they love and learn more stuff about it. So any more people joining the audience just adds to that. And we love being on other people's podcasts and having guests on ours. So if you have any suggestions, we'd love to hear about it. You can reach us via email at sirens@sirensofscream.com or on Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr and Facebook and all that good stuff at Sirens of Scream. And then you can find all of our show notes and old episodes and all of the recommendations and things that we talk about at the top of the show at sirensofscream.com. And you can find me at Sierra Houck on Twitter and Instagram. What about you, Jackie? Where can people find you?
I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram. And real quick note, because it actually came up with a friend recently, just a reminder that we actually put out 31 Days of Horror pretty much every October. So if you're looking for just a whole slew of horror recommendations, go back to our previous episodes and check out some 31 Days of Horror episodes. Got
2 years worth of them now.
Hell yeah, we do.
That's 62 things.
Actually, even more, because we do three on Halloween. Well, that's right. 31st.
We do three on Halloween. So many.
Eventually, we're going to have a new plan for our Halloween episode.
Yeah, I think we can squeeze one more out this year. Melissa, where can people follow you?
You can find me at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram, and also on the Talking Comics podcast when I'm not here.
Hey.
Or sleeping. You can find me. Mm-hmm.
We're giving people awesome makeovers.
When I'm not sleeping. That's why I'm always sleeping.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Bye.
Today we escape.